In the Duke Room. My name is Patty, and I'm an alcoholic. Hey, guys. This is an open meeting of the Atlanta Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA. And since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons have the lists of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and your understanding. David will read the preamble.
Thank you. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. Thank you.
Please join in the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Roy will read the steps.
Hi, my name is Roy, and I'm an alcoholic. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had that spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Katya will read the traditions.
My name is Katya. I'm an alcoholic. Okay, 1, the 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. 3, the only requirement for AA membership is the desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions. ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is John L.
Hi, I'm John. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 5th of 2001, and my home group is the Atlantic Group. My sponsor is Stacy S., and I'm working on steps 9, 10, 11, and 12. I say that for many different reasons. Most important to tell you, I've got 6.5 years of sobriety, which is a miracle. I started drinking like an alcoholic when I was 14 years old. I was born in Virginia, but grew up here in New York City. And growing up in New York, 14, 15 years old, all of my friends drank, and all of us drank alcoholically. And many of us are here in this room tonight. And it's true. For many different reasons, I drank. I love the effect. I love the way it made me feel. Little did I know when I was 14 or 15 years old that I couldn't control the way that I felt, and I couldn't control my relationship with alcohol. I had my first sip of creme de menthe liqueur when my parents were married in Virginia, and I must have been 5 years old. When I was about 2 years sober, I remembered that I used to go into the liquor cabinet in my parents' old house in Virginia, and I used to go and drink the creme de menthe liqueur. I don't know if I got drunk, but I liked the way that it tasted, and I liked the way that it looked. And I remember a couple other things about being a little kid. I loved to sniff magic markers and airplane glue. I don't know if I got high from them, but I'm the type of person, anything that can get me outside of myself, I can become addicted to, and I love. And I had a tough childhood. And I don't want to talk and focus and say bad things about my parents. They did the best that they could, but I had a divorced parents and fighting and yelling and screaming and kicking and hitting. But there's a point where I've got to claim responsibility for those actions that I took. And so when I was 14, 15 years old, we'd go into a grocery store, buy Coors Light 6-pack, and I'd escape. I'd go into a different world. Alcohol does something to my body that you could tell me I'm going to die tomorrow, but you give me 6 packs of Coors Light, and I feel like I'm going to live forever. And, I lived my life not thinking I would ever turn the age of 30. And that's the way that I went through life. I had every single opportunity you possibly could have in life. I got the opportunity to go to great schools, education paid for, didn't care, never went to class. All I wanted to do was get drunk. And, that's my relationship with alcohol. Once I put it in my body, I can't stop. I'm what you would probably call a textbook binge drinker. I'm not a blackout drinker. But, I drink 3, 4, 5 nights a week, 2 nights a week, 1 night a week. But when I go out with a bang. I don't stop until something bad happens, usually me vomiting all over a place or not. And I continue to do this over and over and over. I don't stop till I have no money in my pocket. And the relationship that's the most important to me back then was what was in my hand and what's going in my body. I didn't really, care about anything else. I was like a tornado. And so I'd lie, cheat, steal. I'd harm others. I'd steal my mother's purse. I'd steal her credit cards. My mother got remarried. I'd steal my stepfather's credit cards. Anything that wasn't bolted down in the house, I took. And this is the way that I live life, the entitlement that if you were me, you would drink the same way and not a care in the world, and I'm not going to live till 30, so it doesn't matter. And, being a binge drinker in your 20s, after I went to college and, living here in New York, it gets scary. Your body goes through changes and you can't, walk off that hangover anymore. And I started to disappear. I'd go out on a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night, didn't know what night, but I'd say, I'm just going to have one beer. I'm just going to have one glass of wine. Next thing you know, I'm gone for 24 or 48 hours. And, if you're out drinking for 24 or 48 hours, you're not hanging out with people in this room. Well, actually, in this room, yes. But as the night progresses, people get scarier and scarier. And so reality, maybe would I have died from, you know, alcoholism at that young of an age? I don't know, but someone might have killed me. Someone might have hit me. I definitely drove my car and got in car crashes all the time. And, you know, you would have thought those things would have stopped me, but no. I mean, for me to stop drinking, and I had so many signs that there was something wrong with the way that I drank, you know, horrible car crashes, going to court, getting in trouble, getting thrown out of schools, waking up every single morning hungover, vomiting, lying, cheating, you know, making excuses for everything I've done. The only way that I could get sober is not having any money in my pocket. That's just the way it had to happen. So one night, got left with people I thought were my friends and had to walk 70 blocks home from a nightclub at 4 o'clock in the morning. And along the way, I ran into some guy who was like a drug dealer, and he's like, John, John. And, you know, I was like, how do I know this guy? How do I know this person? Look at what's happened to my life. This isn't where I've come from. And I just said, you know, no, not again. I had no money in my ATM, so I had to walk. I had not a dollar. And that was financial, you know, bankruptcy, you know, spiritual, mental, everything at once. And so that's my bottom. So, you know, what's happened in the past 6.5 years, you know, there are ups and downs, but like my ups and downs are much higher than any, you know, anything I could have imagined in my life back then. You know, I would never have been able to talk in front of 300, 400, 200 people when I was out drinking. You know, I was so driven by fear. I had the lowest self-esteem. You know, if you lie 1,000 times, if you just make up excuses, if you show up late to work or you never show up, you're not prepared for the test, if you're stealing from your mom and hurting people, you know, you're not going to feel good when you wake up in the morning. I woke up every single morning, you know, hoping I wouldn't wake up. You know, I wouldn't be here. Did that really happen? Is this really my life? I wake up today, I feel good. You know, I feel great. I don't feel hungover. And if that was just it, if I just didn't drink and I didn't have hangovers, it would be worth it. But these amazing things happen in sobriety. And sobriety AA has given me the tools to live a life that there is no way I possibly would have been prepared to live had I been drinking. You know, I don't have to make excuses. I don't have to lie. I don't have to say I'm not prepared. I have a relationship with my family. You know, all those things that I thought were my entitlement reasons for drinking, you know, I have made amends for. And, you know, I have been shown in sobriety that I have the most amazing parents. They love me more than anything in the world. They would do anything for me. But that relationship, that understanding was not there when I was drinking. You know, it took some time to work on. You know, just living a life, you know, like with not a care in the world and just wanting to die. And then all of a sudden, you know, life has meaning. You know, the meaning in my life is coming here, going to AA meetings, helping other people, helping people at work, doing things and doing service, and, you know, having a very useful and happy life. And I'm not going to say life is perfect and life is great. You know, I have a lot of downs, but I'm so lucky to be here in sobriety and have an amazing sponsor, Stacy. I don't know how I would have made it here without him. I don't know how I would have made it here without my great friends in the program. So my recommendation is, if you think you might have a problem with drinking, and if you showed up here to see if maybe you have an alcohol problem, people that don't have problems with drinking don't walk into AA meetings on Park Avenue. It just doesn't happen. So stay here for a little period of time. You know, I had denial. Well, was I really that bad? Did I have a real problem with drinking? Well, I kind of passed out at the wheel and hit that truck, and we rolled over. But, you know, I also got in another wreck the next week, you know. And I always had this denial. Why? Because I have such an ego. And I'd say, you know, I'd look at that bum walking down this, you know, walking down the street, and I'd see that bum sitting on, you know, on like the park bench or whatever. And I'd look at him and cast an eye and think there's something wrong with him. You know, how could someone end up like that? I understand now. We have the same exact disease. That's exactly where I was going. And I want to thank Duncan also for asking me to speak. I'm just so grateful to be part of this group, and thank you for the service.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Kereth.
Hi, everyone. My name is Kereth, and I'm an alcoholic. I wanted to thank Jen for asking me to speak. This is a real honor and privilege, especially to be on this side of the podium. I spent a lot of time on the other side of the podium, and I'll get to that in a little bit. So my sobriety date is August 27, 2007. Heidi is my sponsor. This is my home group, and I'm currently on step 9. So I grew up in alcoholism. My parents, you know, it's all over the family tree. It was what I was used to. It's what I saw. And, you know, I couldn't wait to party. I couldn't wait to, you know, to be the silly person that, you know, that my parents kind of displayed to me when they came home. I really couldn't wait. And my first drink was when I was 13. It was on New Year's Eve. I was at a friend's house, and we were watching her little brother. And, you know, she's like, let's drink. I'm like, let's do it. And we drank, got drunk. I felt awful the next day, and I went home. I didn't think anyone knew, and I called her up, you know, with my little secret, you know, like, hey, we had this great bonding experience. And she was on the other end of the phone, and she said, well, my parents said I can't hang out with you anymore. And I was like, well, why not? And she's like, well, they said you're a bad influence. And of course, my thought was, I just went to the fridge to get the Coca-Cola. You went to go get the wild turkey. You know, and of course, like, my first resentment as an active alcoholic was around alcohol. Not surprising. And, you know, I just chased the party, and I chased that just to be emotionally immature. I just always wanted a reason to party, just to be irresponsible, you know, not to be accountable. You know, some of the highlights are in high school, the senior prom, you know, I got drunk, I got sick, and the person holding the garbage pail for me to get sick in was the principal. Did I think anything was wrong with this? No, I thought it was hilarious. The colleges I went to, I chose, you know, the best party school, and one school wasn't party school enough, so I transferred to another one. You know, I traveled with the Grateful Dead, and then once that was over, I, you know, found the rave and trance party scene. Drugs are a part of my story, but alcohol was my first love and the one that I always went back to. And then, you know, it got to the point where the people at my job were kind of looking at me funny, bringing me into their office to have talks with me about my performance. And, you know, so I was like, all right, I got to get out of Dodge. These people are just getting a little too crazy for me. And, you know, like any good alcoholic, I went traveling. And I packed my apartment up, I quit my job, and I went traveling the world for 6 months. The mainstay of my travels was India. I was there for 4 months, you know, because in India, that's where God is. That's where the real people are going to understand me. And, you know, I went there to practice my yoga and really get spiritual. You know, during the 4 months, I took one yoga class. Why? Because I was wasted the entire time. And you know, the people over there, different culture, different language, they treated me the same exact way that my coworkers and my supervisors were just treating me. And that was my first kind of, you know, snapshot into, oh, I might be the problem here. So I came back from my trip on my knees, you know, moved in with my mom again because I was totally broke, and found a job, moved into the city. And my roommate 12-stepped me into Al-Anon, and it was such a gift. And part of my Al-Anon program, I had one open AA meeting a week, and this was my meeting. And I sat in this room for 3 years, you know, getting compassion for the alcoholic, you know, learning about the disease, you know, la la la, and just never realizing that I had a huge part in, you know, in that. And so I was working my steps in Al-Anon, and I was making a ninth step amends to my dad. My dad passed away about 12 years ago, and I was sitting at his grave making my ninth step amends, and I realized everything I was making amends for I did when I was drunk. And it just opened up my world, you know? And of course I thought, you know, as soon as I kind of had an inkling, I was just like, all right, we're going to shut that down because I was only 23, you know? How can I be an alcoholic that young? And, you know, the people that come into this room that are not even the age of 21, I mean, you guys are my heroes. Like, I can't even, I was so out in left field at that point, you know, and I just used every reason, especially my father dying, to go on a rampage of drinking and just partying. And thank you. And, you know, I just had a few other drunken episodes where, you know, the last one was where I drunkenly fell on my coworker and she thought he was hilarious, but I really knew. Like, I knew it was time for me. And I, you know, talked to my Al-Anon sponsor and she brought me here. And I came in here with a lot of pride and a lot of ego. And it was a world of pain for me. You know, because it was like, I read the book, big book, thank you very much. I've done some of the steps, thank you very much. I'm fine, I got it, I just need support, you know, to stop drinking. And I was humbled real quick, real fast. And really, really grateful for that, because if I don't go through the pain and being humbled in this program, I am not going to be of any use to a newcomer or sponsees. Like, I'm not going to have anything to offer them. And, you know, it took me up until about 7 months to really want to be here and not be angry, you know. So if you're in your first couple of months and you're just, like, wanting to jump out of your skin or, you know, just really rage and scream at someone, I totally identify. You know, I'm only 10 months in, and I think it was about 7 months, I was standing talking to a newcomer, and she was saying, you know, I'm just so angry, and I just want to jump out of my skin, and I just can't stand it. And it just came over me that I'm not that girl anymore. Like, I don't know when it happened. I have no idea, but it just happened. I mean, this program, it's just, it works so subtly and so slowly. You know, as an alcoholic, I want it right now. And it doesn't happen that way. And it's, you know, I just really have to have the faith and the courage and the willingness to keep showing up despite my feelings. I mean, that's just been the greatest gift for me, because, you know, if it was up to me, I'd be home in bed under the covers, you know, like keeping the world out, not showing up for anyone. And I got a service position right away, and service has saved me completely in this program, you know, just to keep on showing up and put others before me, because, you know, I'm self-centered to the core, and it's just, it's all about me. And you know, even this past weekend, I was at a 4th of July party, and I was around all these people who absolutely love me from this program, and I was just, like, so uncomfortable, and I'm just like, what is going on? And then it hit me. I walked into that party, you know, wanting to know what these people were going to do for me, and, you know, how they were going to entertain me, and how I was going to feel comfortable around them. And you know what? It's like, I didn't think for a moment what I could bring to the party, how I could be of service to someone else. And I turned to my friend, and I was like, I need to be of service right now, you know? So it took a couple hours to get there, but, you know, eventually I, you know, it clicks. And, you know, it's like, it's progress, not perfection. And, you know, it just, it's like I said, it's slow going, but, you know, it really does work. You know, I've also learned that people are human, including my parents and my sponsor. And, you know, I've really been able to get a better relationship with my higher power, you know, because sometimes I'll call 10 people and I won't get anyone on the phone. And it's like at that point, I have to hit my knees over and over again and just ask God to show me the way. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't come automatically, but it's really just the act of doing it over and over and over again that will get me to that place that I need to be. You know, it's just like, you know, I just want it now. And I'm impatient and, you know, I'm a little crazy. But, you know, it's like that's why I'm in this room. And I'm able to, you know, listen to the stories. And people are like, oh, yeah, yeah, me too. Oh, yeah, I've totally done that, you know. And I get, you know, I have that terminal uniqueness. And my sponsor reminds me of that all the time. And because I'm not unique, you know. It's just like I'm just another bozo on the bus, as we say. And I don't know, I'm so incredibly grateful to be here, and, you know, I've met so many incredible people in this room who love me despite my insanity, and, you know, thank you, and, you know, I walked into the woods of active alcoholism for 22 years, and now I've turned around, and I still have a long, long way to walk out, but, you know, as I'm walking, if I hesitate, if I trip and I fall, if I go to turn back around, I know all you guys are going to be standing there just looking at me and loving on me until I know what the next right action is. You know, I stand up, I put my tool belt back on, and I keep on walking out. And I'm just so grateful that you guys are here. You guys have been such a power of example to me despite myself. And I'm just so grateful to have this experience to share my story. So thank you.